I would like to introduce the main speaker for this evening, Jeff H. from Encinitas.
I'm Jeff. I'm an alcoholic. Welcome to everyone who is new in here tonight, and good job on your 10-minute. And thank you, Larry, for asking me last week to do this. He took me aside last week and put his arm on my shoulder, and you ready to be of service to God and your fellows? And I was like, so you want me to speak next week, right? And he was like, yeah. I'm like, huh? Okay. You know, and I really didn't want to. Like, my first thought was no, absolutely not. You know, and like, luckily, I've been shown in Alcoholics Anonymous and strong sponsorship and strong men around me just to say yes, you know, and quit fighting and just say yes. And I still do that today, even when it's really uncomfortable and really inconvenient. I really, really, really don't want to. I've had enough experience with saying yes to know the fruits of it. And so I kind of just do it, you know. It's funny, I brought a couple guys up with me here tonight, and which is cool, because like they got in the car and with me and came here, and people were not getting in the car with me prior to Alcoholics Anonymous. They were avoiding me at all costs. I had parents telling their kids, my friends at the time, stay away from him, you know, he's not a good influence, and stuff like that, you know. So it's kind of was just my MO while I was out there, and stay away from that guy, that was my name while I was out there. And I gotta tell you guys this funny story really quick. So I'm out in Arizona a couple months ago visiting a buddy out there, and he lived here in the program, really good friend of mine. Went out there to visit him, and my sobriety date's May 9th of 2010, so 5.5 years sober, something like that. And I go out there, and I'm really tired by the time I get there, and so I just crash out right when I get there. And I wake up the next morning peeing myself, because I had a dream where I was going to the bathroom, and I woke up, and I was really going to the bathroom. And I could not have been more embarrassed, and my clothes were wet, and I got them off really quick before my girlfriend woke up, and threw them in the corner of the room, and just hoped and prayed that she would not find them there, and just left them there for the 2 days that I was there. So, for anyone, you know, so drunk or sober, you can wet the bed, and if there's any bed wetters in here still sober, you know, I'm with you. There we go, and you know, so. I'm not perfect by any means yet, you know. I don't know if I ever will be, but, you know, just stuff that happens around here still to me. And I can't take myself too seriously. I kept it in for a couple days because I was really embarrassed, and I got honest about it, and my friends just laughed and related, and I don't know, I can't take myself too seriously about that stuff anymore, and it's funny these days, you know. And really excited to be standing up here tonight. I don't know why, I just am. Especially Halloween, there's literally, and I mean this with all the sincerity, like there's no place I'd rather be right now than here. It's probably the best place for me right now on a Saturday night on Halloween, you know? And I don't know, like I'm a really good forgetter. Like I forget things all the time. Like when I'm reading with sponsees, like I forget where we left off, and I'll forget whose turn it is. Whose turn it is to read, and I just forget things all the time, you know. And I never really take a step back to look at how divine and enormous Alcoholics Anonymous is as a whole. I mean, there's a lot of people in here tonight. Like apparently, I heard it was light. I mean, this is a lot of people in here tonight, and. You know, all have had spiritual awakenings or are on their way to having spiritual awakenings and don't drink anymore and are here on a Saturday. Like, I don't ever take the time to step back and really look at that, but when I do, it's freaking beautiful, man. You know? And, I mean, this is the best thing that's ever happened to me, and I had no idea what it was, and I had no idea that I wanted this when I got sober. One of the first memories that I have is a resentment. And I was really, 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 really young. I mean, we're talking maybe 7, 8, something like that. And I was at Mom and Dad's house, obviously, but at the parents' house, and I was playing with a snow globe over a wooden floor. We had a wooden floor right when you walked in the door, and my mom walks over and tells me not to play with that because I'm probably gonna drop it and it's gonna break. And when I hear that, what I hear is you're incompetent and you'll never amount to anything and you're a loser and why are you playing with it? You know what I mean? And that's what I hear at that age. And I remember this specifically. Like I resented her for that, and I'm like, I'm gonna show that effing lady right now. And I purposely dropped it, and it shattered all over the place, and I got in trouble and all that stuff. And it's just like I have never listened to anybody. Like, I just don't listen to people. Like, I don't care to. Please don't tell me not to do something, because I will do it. Just because of the mere fact that you told me not to, I will do it. You know, I'm defiant by nature. I'm just hardwired that way, just to do wrong, to do what you say not to do. And I could have used a drink then. I could, you know, take the edge off a little bit, like 7 or 8. I could have used a shot of vodka right then and there, you know, and why not, you know? And to be having those thoughts, you know, and that anger towards somebody else at that age, there's something not right about that, you know? And I didn't know that before. And I don't know, I was fascinated with alcohol, even young. Like, I grew up great. Mom and Dad are still married today. They afforded me every single opportunity in the world. Like, they blazed the path. Like, they just afforded me every single opportunity that there was. And they're very straight edge. My mom's been working since she was 16. She's almost 60 now. My dad's been at the same company for 33 years. He's about to retire. I mean, he's very by the book. He shows up to work. He comes home. He sits on his lazy boy and he watches sports until he goes, you know. And they're very normal people. Like, they have no, and then there's me. Like, I don't know where I came from, but, they're very normal, very straight edge, and my dad would have a beer every, God, once in a while. I'm 27 years old. I've probably seen my dad drink 2 or 3 times in that whole entire time, and it's just one beer all the time. But I was always fascinated with that liquid that was in that bottle with it. Like, what are you drinking? You know, like, what is it? Like, I just wanted to know what it was, and I never knew why. I was just always so curious and fascinated with it. And, you know, one day we were at a winery out in Rancho Bernardo, and I asked him for a sip. I really wanted to know about this stuff, and I asked him for a sip, and he gave me a sip, you know, and nothing really happened at all, you know, whatsoever, but I remember just being so freaking curious and being so happy that I finally got to take a sip of it, you know, and never knew why. I was just fascinated with it. And and fast forward, you know, I didn't drink until I was 14 after that. And so I kind of just white-knuckled life up until then. I could have used a drink far before I ever took one. That's for damn sure. I'm wound very tight, you know, very, very tight. And a normal day for me, like, I seek out problems and things. I seek out the negative and everything. I think very negatively. I always think the worst, sense of impending doom all the time. This is going to happen. I don't know what's going to happen. This is probably going to happen. Oh God, this is going to happen. And this, you know, and I mean, I'm talking to my friend Mike back here before the meeting, and I asked him 5 times if my tie was straight. I didn't believe him the first time. And then I asked him 4 more times, you know, and just, I can't, I'm wound so tight still even to this day. It amazes me. And you know, but that's kind of simmered down a bit through the work and through the process of the steps. And I don't know. I always wanted to be somewhere else. I always wanted to be somebody else. I always wanted to be doing something else. Like, if I would have just had different parents, everything would have been fine. If I would just get paid more at my job, everything would be fine. And if I would just have this, everything would be fine. If I would just have this, everything would be fine. And nothing was ever freaking good enough for me. And when I did get what I thought I wanted, whether it be, you know, the money or the toys or her or whatever, like, it would last about a week, the shine would wear off, and I'd want something else. You know? And even in sobriety, I remember when I got my car, it was silver, and then I saw a red one going down the street. I was like, damn, I should have got the red one, you know? And I just, it's nothing is ever good enough for me. And it's just how I'm wired. I don't know why. It's just, that's how I am. And I never think that I'm enough, and so I just make stuff up about myself. I say what I think you want me to say, and I do what I think you want me to do, and you say jump, and I say how high, and I lose myself in that. Like, I had no idea who I was when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, because I was so busy protecting this image of mine, you know, that I had for so long, and this facade, and, you know, this is who everybody needs to see me as, and the badass, and the scary guy, and this, and that. I was just really scared. Like, I had a lot of fear every time I walked out the door. I didn't know what was going to happen. I didn't know who I was going to see. I don't know how to make eye contact with people. Like, I would talk to people, and I'd be looking down, or up here, or up there, or over. I can't look at people in the eye, and I don't know what to say, and I don't know if there's a right answer or a better answer to your question, so I think too much about it, and then too much time's passed, and now I can't talk to someone, I'm just going to walk away. And it's just, my mind goes a million miles an hour. It goes, and it goes, and it goes, man, and it's just so much fear around everything, and I don't want to try anything new, because I know I'm just going to fail, so I just don't do anything. I'm very lazy, I'm very slothful. I had like a stack of blank job applications under my mattress hidden from my parents because I was out looking for jobs, you know, but I never wanted to do it because what if I got the job and then I'd fail at it, so I'll just not get it. But if I don't get it, then I'll be a failure. You know, it's just one end or the other. It was never like, nothing was ever okay. Nothing was ever okay. And the only time I was really genuinely happy and everything was okay when I was drunk, you know. And I needed alcohol. I needed alcohol to generate that for me. Because I didn't know how to do that on my own. I just didn't, you know. And I would watch people walk their dogs down the street and go to work and go to the gym and just go for walks or whatever they're, like, play soccer or what in the park, whatever they're doing. I have no, like, I just don't know how you do that. How? You know, I didn't know people were sober when I got to alcohol. I didn't know people lived that way. I thought everybody drank. I literally thought everybody drank alcohol. Why would you not? Why would you not? You know, like, I don't understand it. And and so when I was 14, I was in Michigan with my cousin and his friends, and they're all 21 and older than me. And what am I doing here? Why am I with them? I have nothing in common with them, this, and that. And my cousin hands me a bottle of peppermint schnapps from the front seat and says, drink this, you know, drink this. Two words, drink this. And I was like, okay, I probably should, so I will, you know, and that was my thought, and I took some sips of it, and my God, if, like, I aged 7 years by the time I got out of the car. Like, I was 21, and I was one of them, and I had known them forever, you know, and we're tight, and we're best friends, and just, like, I was actually better than them once I got out of the car, you know, and it's just, everything changed. Everything changed. You know, my perception of reality completely changed once I drank that peppermint schnapps that night. And, you know, fast forward some more. My first time blacking out, I went to a house party. I was at a house party in Rancho Bernardo, if anyone here knows where that is, and 15 years old, and I didn't know the house owner. I didn't know where I was. I just know I went with a couple friends, and that was it. And I walked in, and I had no intention of this happening. And I walked in, and I saw the kitchen, and I saw a bottle of liquor on the kitchen table. And I just went to it. Like, I just, okay, I'll go, you know, I'll go this way. And I didn't intend for that to happen, but I just went to it. And I sat down, and I started pouring shot after shot after, and I couldn't, I remember not stopping. Like, I just could not stop. And it was autopilot. And then I put the shot glass down, I just put the bottle to my lips, and I polished it off, and that's the last thing I remember. And apparently what happened, what I was told, I was always told the next day what usually happened. And that's never good, you know, when you have to be told what happened the next day. And apparently what happened is I got mad at something in this drunken rage, and I got up, and I flipped the entire kitchen table on its back and broke everything on it, and a projectile vomited all over this guy's kitchen, fell down, got back up, projectile vomited again, broke some more stuff, and got kicked out, got my friends kicked out. I'm being dragged out like this, you know, and my feet are dragging behind me with my head down, you know, on the shoulders, and they put me in the car, and I come to a little bit, and it was my friend Stephanie next to me, and I came to vomiting on her, and she was not happy about that, mind you. And the next thing I know, I woke up in a house that wasn't mine and wasn't anyone's. I didn't know where I was. The clothes I had on were not mine. I don't know how those got on me. I was half in a closet, half out of the closet with a sleeping bag on top of me. I don't know how that happened. And I had a headache the size of a semi-truck, and it hurt so bad. And you think any normal person would be like, wow, I'm going to not do that again, you know? And my only thought was, when can I do that again, you know? And when can I, God, dude, like, can we just go now and get more, you know? It's like, I just want to drink, man. I just want to drink. And, you know, and I had a couple jobs, and I was functioning for a little bit, and I could kind of pull it off, and I just, the effect produced by it was just so good, you know. I mean, it's just, it surpassed anything else, you know. Like, logically, I shouldn't be doing this stuff, but the effect is so good that I'm going to keep doing this stuff, you know, because I don't know how else to produce it. And what that effect is for me is I just don't care. Simply put, I just do not care. All that fear, all that anxiety, all that tension that I described a little bit ago is gone when I drink. And I love it. I love being in that place where I don't care about anything, you know, and it worked for a long, long time. And there was an intuitive thought in my mind, this is what I'm going to do the rest of my life. I need to be drunk the rest of my life. However I need to make that happen, I'm going to make it happen. I need to be drunk the rest of my life. And I remember it was just like this intuitive thought, and I don't know where it came, it was just there. And so, like, I had a couple jobs, and both restaurant jobs, and I was drinking during these jobs, and I don't know how I kept them as long as I did. They should have fired me far before they did. And, you know, one of them finally let me go, and I had a schedule, but I would make my own, really. Like, I didn't care. I'll show up when I want to, and I'd show up late, if at all. I'd show up drunk. I'd show up unshowered, and my hair's a mess, and I'm unshaven, and my clothes have stains on them from like a week buildup because I work in a restaurant. I don't wash them. I don't have time to wash clothes when I'm drinking, you know, and I don't care to do that. And so I just show up a mess, you know, and whenever I want, I don't care. And I have this sense of entitlement, this pride that they'll never get rid of me. They'll never get rid of me. I'm the best employee that they have. Like, it doesn't matter when I show up or if I don't at all. Like, I'm the best freaking employee that they had. And they ended up firing me. And before they did, they brought me into the manager's office. Everyone was in there, and I had sincerely scared this woman that I worked with because I showed up drunk in a mess one day, and I legitimately scared her. She let me know that. She's like, "You scare me." Like, she said that to my face that day. And I'm like, "Whatever, lady, get out of my face." And what's your problem, you know? And I just couldn't see it. I'm so oblivious to it, you know. I can't see it, and they pull me in and they fire me, and they actually were handing me pamphlets to Alcoholics Anonymous. It was really funny. I remember that. And I thought nothing of it at the time. It was actually insulting to me. Like, how dare you hand me these pamphlets? And I took them and I ripped them in half and I threw them in the trash and I scanned all of them with my finger. And I said, "You guys are making the biggest fucking mistake of your lives today." getting rid of me. I was wasted. At this point, I had been drinking and showed up there drunk, and I was wasted, and they told me to go and never come back, and so I did, and then I got fired from my other job 2 days later for rolling my eyes at the district manager because I had to let him in the front door while I was setting up. Like, how dare you take time away, you know? And I was drunk then too, and I got fired from there as well 2 days later. And the thing is, like, you would think that would be enough, and I just didn't care. Like, I didn't I work was getting in the way of my drinking. Like, I did not care at all, you know. And now I get to do what I really, really, really want to do. And it progressed, and you know, I went 3 years unemployed, and I'm drinking, and I'm doing what we got to do to get money to drink, you know, and stuff that I'm not proud of, but stuff that I just kind of had to do, you know. When it comes to alcohol, my will, you know, it's there, you know, and I will find a way. And and I did, and I got put into an outpatient program, and I couldn't stay sober for it. They suggested I do, and I couldn't stay sober for it whatsoever. I remember I was at the beach, and I remember I had to leave because I had to be at outpatient on time, and I was walking, and these two guys in a car, I had no idea who they were, asked me to come over and start drinking warm whiskey with them, and I did. I was like, okay, cool, you know. And I got in the car, not even a thought of outpatient. It just was gone. I just mental blank spot. All right, cool. And I showed up drunk and late, and just I couldn't stay sober for it. And I would go to meetings, and I took a 30-day chip, because if I didn't, then they would start asking questions because they had known me for 30 days, and I couldn't have that happen. So I took a 30-day chip, and I was drunk when I took it, and they asked me to tell them how I did it, and I said no, and I sat down, and it was like it was a joke. I mean, this whole thing was a freaking joke to me, man. And it progressed from there, and my parents would kick me out of the house. I would plan to go out and start drinking with the guys, have a couple beers, and come home. Like, that was the plan. I was always trying to control it and enjoy it. I didn't know I was doing that at the time, but I would always have these plans of where I was going, how much I was going to have, and I'll be home at this time. And I would disappear for weeks at a time and not know where I was and not know what happened. And I'd come to a week later and bruised up and bloody, and I'm really good at falling downstairs. I fell downstairs a lot when I was drunk, just a sloppy mess. And I just so afraid of, like, what I did and what I did it to and what I said, just this fear, just this remorse and fear, and I can't do, you know. And it wasn't enough. And there were that was normal for me to just disappear for weeks at a time and only plan to be gone a couple hours. Like, I have plans to go this way, and when I take a drink, I'm that way, and I have no idea what's going to happen that way or what is that way, but I'm going that way. And it's never good, you know, when I come out of it. And you know, my parents were sick of me. It was just yelling with them. There was no talking anymore. It was just constant yelling. I would create arguments so I could leave and go drink. You know, I needed an excuse. And they were just there, and they got the brunt of it, you know. And those two people are two of the strongest freaking people I've ever met in my life to put up with my ass. Like, I have no idea how they do it. Still do it today. I have no idea. And, you know, and I love those two to death today. And I've gotten the chance to make amends with them, and they gave me a key to their house and said, come over anytime. You know, and they were kicking me out of their house. You know, constantly kicking me out, taking me back in, kicking me out. And it was just constant yelling. And I remember my mom walked in my room, caught me drinking again by myself, and started crying and ran out of the room into my dad's arms. He's crying, and looked at me and said, "You're ruining our marriage, Jeff. Why do you continue to do this to us?" And the only thing I knew how to do was get pissed, go back to my room and keep drinking. That's the only thing I knew how to do. It wasn't enough. It wasn't enough for me to stop. You know, the love that those two people had for me is not enough to make me stop drinking. It's just not. You know, it's just not. And so by the end of it, I'm 22 years old. I got sober when I was 22. And I drink in my closet by myself because it's where I like to be. It's furthest away from people. I hate people. I don't like people at this point. I'm a recluse. I don't leave the house unless I need more alcohol, and even then I don't like leaving because I'm really afraid to leave the house, you know, in case something happens. I don't know what's going to happen, but something's going to happen, and I can't keep food down. I chose not to eat so I could feel the full effect of the alcohol and it wouldn't get soaked up too quickly, so I would just not eat. I would choose not to eat, and I was throwing up blood, and I was sick constantly, like just sick constantly, and got sent to urgent care a couple times, and the nurses came back with pamphlets to alcohol. Like, I've been handed pamphlets to Alcoholics Anonymous in a lot of areas of my life and never put it together, you know. And it's funny because this is where I am now and this is where I belong. It's so funny, you know. And I just didn't see it at the time. And 115-ish pounds probably, soaking wet, I don't know, and just, you know, I just dying. But still wanted to drink. I couldn't, like, regardless of all that, I still love the effect produced by alcohol. Like, it just won't, it's not enough for me. And what happened is I got sloppy again, and I got put into a treatment center. And you know, I'm really thankful for that place because it introduced me to Alcoholics Anonymous. That place did not restore my sanity, but it introduced me to what did. You know, so I'm really, really thankful for that place. And I have no idea what happened in that place other than I got a big book and a sponsor. Like, I don't remember anything that went on in there. And, you know, and I hated it, and I was really, really scared, and I hated the people there. And the beds were really uncomfortable. The chairs were uncomfortable. The food sucked. And everything just, I hated everything about it. And I was so, I just couldn't believe my life had gotten to this point. Like, what the hell happened? What happened? I pride myself on my mind and my ability to get myself out of jams because I've done it all the time. I couldn't get this one, and I couldn't figure it out, you know, and it scared the hell out of me. Like, I was really scared and confused when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. I had nothing going on up here anymore. Like, I have plans and ideas all the time. There was just nothing up here anymore. It was done. Like, it was empty and bankrupt, you know, pretty much. And I got hooked up with a guy who was disgustingly enthusiastic about Alcoholics Anonymous. Like, disgusting. Like, it was just... And everyone was telling me to get a sponsor in a big book, and I did. And I didn't do it because I wanted to be sober. Like, I didn't want to be sober when I got to Alcoholics. I didn't know what that was. So how could I want that? You know, I don't even know what that is. And the idea of it alone scared the hell out of me. I just wanted to learn how to drink and not have bad shit happen to me. And I thought you guys were going to teach me that. Like, just do this, dude. Just don't drive it this time, you know, and you'll be good. And I was just waiting for the secret, you know, and people kept saying, book and sponsor steps. Like, jeez, all right, you know, and I did, so they would shut the hell up, really, is what it was. And I was tired of them on my back about it. I'm like, are you happy? I got one now, you know, cool, you know. And I just had no intention of being sober at all, you know, and still thought it was a joke. Like, I had no idea what any of this was about. Just clueless, you know. And the guy I got hooked up with, who still sponsors me today, I call that man every single day. Still, he knows everything that goes on with me. I tell him everything. He probably knows me better than my own family does, you know. And I like that because he gets me. He gets the way my mind goes and how fast it goes and everything. You know, he understands, and I love that. And I was very unique when I got. I never related to anybody in my life. I could never connect with anyone. I never knew how to do that, and I was always by myself. Like, regardless of where I was or who I was with, I was always by myself because you didn't get it. And there was a lot of secrets I was holding on to, a lot of stuff I just cannot voice to you. There's literally something that blocks it from coming out of my mouth. Like, it's so paralyzing for me to tell the truth that I just can't. I don't. I just choose not to. I lie. It's a lot easier to do that for me. Just the way he carried himself, man, just the way he walked around the room, and just, he looked so comfortable in his own skin. And I don't know what that's like. When I got here, I didn't know what that was like, and being comfortable, I don't know what that is, unless I'm drunk, then I know what it is. Laughing, smiling, he had a bunch of friends in AA, you know, and just, he looked comfortable, man. He looked okay. Like, he just looked like he enjoyed being in his skin. That's what he looked like. And I didn't know what it was, but I knew that I wanted that, and I didn't know what it was exactly, but I wanted that. I wanted it, you know. So I've wanted it my entire life, and like, he had it. Like, what the hell is going on here, you know? And he got me busy right away. He was like, you're going to call these three guys every single day. You're going to be at this meeting and this meeting at this time. You're going to be 20 minutes early. You're going to stay 20 minutes late. You're going to talk to guys. You're going to get to know them. You're going to call me every single day at this time. You're going to get commitments. And I was like, you need to chill out, dude. And I told him that. I was like, you need to calm down, dude. Like, this is not, you need to slow down. He's like, why? You know, and he said, why? And then kept giving me more work. And what he was doing, he was showing me Alcoholics Anonymous. He was doing everything he was asking me to do. And I would watch him do everything he was asking me to do. So he wasn't just telling me crap. He was actually doing the deal, you know. And I liked that. And I still take that man's direction today, sometimes. And when I don't, I get myself into trouble, and then I get back on the beam and take suggestions and stuff, you know. And like I said, I'm not perfect, but, you know, and I don't know, man. Like, we sat down, and, like, I related to him. Like, I identified with him. If I don't identify with you, I don't need to do what you do. Like, it's just that simple for me. Like, if you don't understand the way I've drank or the way where I've been, like, I don't need to do what you do. I just don't. I'll leave. It's easy for me to leave. I've left plenty of places before. I'll do it again. You know, it's not that hard to do. And he sat down and he just started telling me about, like, really a step one experience for him, you know, and like how he used to drink and what he used to do. And he looked nothing like what he was talking about. He looked absolutely nothing like what he was describing to me. And I mean, this is a guy who takes a glass, puts ice in it, and pours mouthwash into it, and has Listerine on the rocks. Like, that's, and he didn't seem like that guy to me. He did not seem like that guy to me at all. You know, like, something had happened with him. Something had happened, you know. And I related to him, and that was it, you know. And he started giving me the work, and what happened is I went and he had me write a bunch of stuff down, and he had me write an inventory. I didn't know what an inventory was at all. And prior to that, like, the group helped me out with, like, the second and third step. Like, I continued to hear the same stuff in here, and I continued to hear people talk about how they were and how they're happy now and this and that, and they always threw sponsor steps and God in their shares where you know, wherever it was, and they were always throwing those three things in, and it was just over and over and over and over and over again. And I watch people. I'm a people watcher. I observe, and like I was listening, and thankfully alcohol beat me up enough when I got here to open my ears up a little bit and hear what was being offered here. I don't know why that's the way it was. I don't know why my sobriety date's the date it is. It just is. It's kind of just what happened. And that's all I can say about it. And so he, like, I just had to believe it, what you guys were talking about. Like, I didn't know what else to do, you know? And you guys were telling the truth, and I related with you, and I believed you. I just believed you guys. I don't know why I believed you. I just did. And then I just kind of got into the work, and my sponsor got me really busy. And basically what he did is he kept me busy enough until I could have some kind of an awakening. That's what he did. And then said, take this and go show what I, you know, go show somebody else what I just showed you. You know, he showed me how to be a sponsor, basically, in Alcoholics Anonymous. And so he had me write a bunch of stuff down, and, you know, resentments and fears and stuff like that, and got to see my part and all that, which I had never seen before, that new angle that we look at it from, and like the book talks about, like, my part is the new angle. I've never looked at it that way in my life. And what I saw is I've had a part to play in every single situation that has ever happened to me in my life. I've always pointed the finger, and now I can't anymore, because here it is in black and white. Here's the truth, and my sponsor calls it the answers to the test, and he calls it a list of why you're not able to stay sober. That's what he calls it, you know? And he's right. Like this is what I'm going to use for the future. Like, everything is right here, you know? Everything is right here in this fourth step. And I read it to him, and I'll tell you what, like, I went over to his house. It was about 3.5 hours. We went up to his room, and I sat down, and I read this fourth step to him, and it was the most nauseating thing I had ever done in my life. Like, it was one of the scariest things I have ever done in my life. I don't tell the truth, let alone another man, the truth about who I am, you know? And I didn't know what else to do. And so I read it to him, you know? I was, like, clueless, and I just read it to him. And what happened is, I mean, I was shaking the whole time. I laughed, I cried, I threw my shit across the room, I got pissed off, and he related to me on some stuff, and then we went to a meeting afterwards. And I was still shaking at the meeting. Like, I was like literally like this. Like, I could not believe what I had just done. Like, did I really just do that? Like, I couldn't believe it. And we went to a meeting, and I remember not hating Alcoholics Anonymous as much that night. And that was it. Like, it wasn't this burning bush experience for me or anything like that. If it was for you, more power to it. It was not for me. That is not my experience. And I didn't hate Alcoholics Anonymous as much. I didn't hate you guys as much, you know, and that was it. And I think the kicker for me was the next day my sponsor answered the phone. It's just as simple as that for me. After what I had read to him, he answered the phone. He's like, what's up, man? How you doing? Like I didn't even do it with him last night, you know, and like nothing had even happened. Like, he just talked to me normally. And I found out that day that Alcoholics Anonymous is a safe, like, this is a safe place to be. That's what I found out. You know, that was my fifth step experience. Like, I didn't hate you guys as much, and this is a safe place to be. That was my fifth step experience. And what happened is I started to slowly open up to more guys around me and kind of let them know what's going on. And today, those are some of the best freaking relationships I have in my life today, you know. And he showed me how to go out and clean wreckage up from my past that was on my fourth step and other harms and stuff like that. Like, there's something about the human interaction steps, you know, 5, 9, and 12 that are just really magical for me, like, where I have to interact with people, you know what I mean, and look them in the face. Like, it's really cool, the effect that gets produced from that for me. It's a lot of freedom and a lot of relief. And so I went out and I looked these people in the eye and I hated every minute of it. And I would keep the car engine running, like contemplating, should I get out of the car or just leave? Like I didn't know what to do. And I would do it because I didn't know what else to do. And he said, if you don't do this, you're probably going to drink again. He said that after every single freaking step. I was like, all right, dude, fine, you know? And after a couple of amends, I'll tell you what, I was amazed before I was halfway through. I don't know if anyone had trouble sleeping early in sobriety or still has trouble sleeping today. I got my first full night's sleep for the first time in a freaking while, dude. Like it had been a while since I had gotten a full night's sleep. And like usually I wake up and, you know, have nightmares and toss and turn. Like I got a full freaking night. I woke up refreshed. Like I haven't had that in a while. What my sponsor described that as was freedom and relief. Like I started to look people in the eye. I started to actually become a part of this world again. Like I started to feel Alcoholics Anonymous working in me and through me around, like around me, you know, and I had never been able to produce that on my own. And then he started talking about a channel, like, okay, let's create a channel now, and I don't know what that is, and channel, what are you talking about, dude? And he said, just sit down for 2 minutes, put your palms up, sit against the wall, and just stay still. Don't freaking scratch yourself, don't pick your nose, just freaking sit there for 2 minutes. And I've continued to do that, and that's grown and evolved and changed, and I can't really tell you much more about that because it's so really personal to me, but I can tell you that there is something there, and I'm fully aware of that today, that is working in my life. Like, that's really all I need to know. Like, I like it really simple like that. Like, I don't want to debate, I don't want to argue, question, anything like that anymore. And so with all this experience and stuff that happened, like, he basically just told me to go out and show this thing to other guys. And what's happened is, I like to sit in the car with the dome light on and read one-on-one. It's kind of just who I am today and who I've turned into. And what was cool is I got to watch another guy relate to Alcoholics Anonymous. I got to watch him laugh and be like, oh, you know, that happened to me too. And that light come on. And the thing is, when I got here, I didn't care about one damn person at all. Like, you could have been dying in the street, I would have walked right past you. Like, that's how much I did not care about you whatsoever. Like, I care about me and what I can get. And I remember getting genuinely happy and excited and joyous for another person, watching them relate to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I had never been able to produce that on my own either. So something happened. And that's when I woke up. I was like, this is what this is about. This thing freaking works, you know. And what's happened is drinking is not my natural response anymore. That's been removed through this process. Like, it's just not there anymore. I don't think about it, and the obsession's been removed. Life still happens. I screw up a lot. But drinking is not my natural response anymore. It's this stuff. It's the tools, you know, that have been ingrained into my life. And I do an inventory. I talk to a guy every night on the phone, and he's up in Orange County. We kind of just go through our day and do, you know, that 11-step inventory, you know, and kind of see what we did good, where we screwed up, this, and that. And I actually got afforded the opportunity to go up to Dana Point and be a part of his wedding and be the best man at his wedding about a couple months ago or something like that. And I didn't know this guy from shit when I got here. Like, I didn't know who he was at all. And he asked me to be the best man at his wedding. Like, that's what happens around here. Those are the relationships that I get to build and create and grow around here, you know. And for me, it's the relationships, man. Like, it is the relationships, you know. And the contact I have with other people, I think, is directly correlated to my conscious contact with God, I believe, you know. And the better my contact is with you, the better my contact is with God. That's what I choose to believe. And as a result, like I said, Mom and Dad gave me the key to their house and told me to come over anytime they want. And their biggest problem today is they don't get to spend enough time with me, you know. And I'm not the greatest at giving my time to them. I'm still very selfish, and I neglect, and I lack in a bunch of areas. And I get honest about it with the guys around me, and I strive to do better. Something has happened through the process of the steps where I sincerely want to change and do better these days. Like, I want to grow up. I want to be a man of my word. I want to be a man, not a boy anymore. And that's happened through the steps. That desire has happened through the steps. And I'm on my way, you know. And I'm going to be on my way the rest of my life, you know. And I don't know. It's really cool to do stuff like this. Like, my first thought when you asked me to talk was, why? Like, what do I have to offer? You know, and it's just weird to me still. Like, people are probably going to come up and thank me at the door, and that's weird to me. Like, it's just my experience, you know? Like, it's still weird to me to be thanked about that stuff. Like, a parking spot outside, like, nothing feeds my ego more than my own parking spot out front. But shortly after I get here, it's almost like uncomfortable, because like it's just I'm not that important these days, man. Like, I am a fallible human being, and I do weird, weird stuff still to this day that I am not proud of. You know, I say things to people that I shouldn't, and I do things that I shouldn't, and I get lazy, and I cut corners at work sometimes, and I yell at people and roll my eyes and get lazy at times and get really fearful at times. And I have a bunch of guys around me who I'm accountable with today because of those three phone calls that I didn't want to make in the beginning. That's what that has flowered into, is accountability with so many people around me. Like, I just not take myself too seriously, tell them what's going on, pray to God, make amends if necessary, and then move on and help somebody. Like, it's directly laid out in the book, the directions on what to do about stuff like that. And that's cool, because I don't know what to do, so it's kind of laid out for me, you know. And I was told I never have to come up with an original idea ever again in Alcoholics Anonymous. Someone will do it for me, and I'll get to watch what happens, and I'll just sit back and watch. And that's what I was told, you know. And it'll either be good or really bad, you know. And I don't know, I've been to a few funerals as well, people who just haven't gotten it, friends who just haven't gotten it, and it's the reality of this thing, you know. Some people get it, some people don't, and I sponsor guys, and they get it, and sometimes they don't. I don't get to choose that either, but it's really cool when they do, and if they don't, then I don't know, you know. AA will still be here, and if there's anyone in this room tonight that isn't done, that's okay. Like, AA will be here, you know. I'm pretty sure AA will be here for you to come back to if you're not done, you know, and that's what I was told, too. And, you know, I listened to what another man was telling me to do. That's it. You know, and my life today is based upon my first step experience. Like, I love new guys. I love working because they remind me of me. Because I forget. I forget how bad it was, dude. Like, I forget with my life is so busy and me thinking that I need more and I deserve more. Like, I still get caught up in that. And then I forget that I was completely unemployable when I got here. I was physically dying. My relationship sucked when I got here. I forget all of that. And when I sit down with a guy or talk to a new guy outside or just talk to anyone in general, it reminds me, like, oh, yeah, you know, and I'm one of you guys, too. You know what I mean? It's cool. My life's boring these days, I guess. Like, I have a job I go to full time. I come home. I live with a beautiful woman who I love dearly, and you know, and then she loves me dearly, and pay some bills and sponsor some guys and do things like this. And really, really simple. You know, I don't like chaos anymore. You know, it's chaos is uncomfortable for me. I still create it because I get bored. You know. And then I get in trouble, and then I have to get honest about it. But for the most part, my life's pretty simple and boring. And the cool part is I'm comfortable in my own skin, and drinking is not my natural response anymore. It's just that has been taken from me without my permission. And it's been really, really rad, you know. And I didn't think I was going to be able to make it 45 minutes, and I'm actually going to shut up now because I'll probably keep talking. So I thank you for letting me...